Today is a hugely significant day. It is the evening when the series three of The Crown, episode one, starts, apparently. I don't know, who is into The Crown here? A few of us. Who likes to wait until there are sort of six or seven so you can watch sort of in one job lot? I think that's what we're probably like to do. But we all have our favourite series, don't we? So it could be The Crown, it could be... I quite enjoy Designated Survivor. I've enjoyed that one. Anyone here watch This Is Us? Anyone? Did you make it to the end?
Yeah, it's amazing.
We've given up on This Is Us, and Attell thinks it's amazing, so only you can decide. But we sort of watched a bit of it, and to be quite honest, I felt I needed to stop watching it because all it did was to get to the end of one episode and leave you waiting for the next one. So, you know, you only watched it so you could be enticed in to watch the next one, and it felt very unsatisfactory to me, and in so many ways, that's like life, I think. We sort of live in between the now and the not yet. Yeah, but we're going to have a conversation about This Is Us now. Can I say, the point is to at least allow there to be some sort of completion at the end of one episode rather than just drifting endlessly on into nothingness, actually. So, I don't know. In the case of This Is Us, it's not so much the, you know, the not yet. It's like not ever, frankly. but the reality, many of us live in that sort of waiting period, I think. We all have dreams, and we all have hopes, and we all have plans. We have things that we long to happen, and we're not sure for certain whether they're going to happen or not. It's been said that there are only two things that we can be certain about in life. Do you know what they are?
Death
and taxes. That's it. Death and taxes is a well-hackneyed phrase. And, you know, I wonder how many of us, if we had the chance to go somewhere where we didn't have to pay state taxes, might go to that place. I mean, the Cayman Islands sort of seems almost as attractive as Tiggy's Beach, actually, and especially in the rain of this past week. Or, you know, if we had that choice, we might do that. But none of us can move away from death. You know, it's certain that we're all going to die. It may be uncertain how we're going to die and when we're going to die, but we're all going to die. And I heard a little story some time ago of a guy who, at age 50, who was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And the doctors basically said that there is nothing we can do. It's too far gone. You've only got a couple of weeks left to live. And he'd been very successful in business. He had lots of friends. And with 2 weeks left to live, he decided that he wanted to throw a party. And he invited all his family and all his friends to his home for this party. And the reason he wanted to throw this party was, essentially, he said this. He had one regret in life, that for him, his faith had been deeply, deeply personal and private. And he'd never really told anyone about his faith in Jesus. And so he realized he didn't have much time left, so he packed his house with anyone he could get into the house. And during the course of this party, he mustered up enough strength to tell his family and friends about Jesus, and that actually he wasn't afraid to die because his confidence was in Jesus. And you can imagine how emotional and powerful a moment like that would be. There he was with his wife and his children, his family and his friends, and he talked about Jesus, and suddenly the crowd that were there turned the table on him and started to say to him what he'd been to them. And they started saying the things that often we only get to say at funerals when it's actually too late to say those sort of things. But they were saying him to his face so he could hear them, and they gathered around him, they laid hands on him, they prayed for him, and it was an incredibly sacred, precious moment. And 2 weeks later, he went to be with the Lord. And at his funeral, something had happened that I'd never heard happen before, actually. Just before the Thanksgiving, the funeral, the celebration was about to happen, this guy came up to the pastor and he said, you know, are you the preacher? And the preacher man replied, yeah, I'm the preacher. And this chap said, was he a Christian? The preacher said, yes, sir, he was a Christian. And the pastor said to this guy who was asking the questions, how did you know him? And he said, I didn't know him. So the pastor said, well, what are you doing here? To which the guy replied, "Well, I try to go to a funeral once a week." And the pastor said, "Why on earth would you do that?" And the guy replied, "It helps me understand how short life is. And when I leave the funeral, I love my wife and I love my family better. And I feel like I'm a better person." Now, I'm not suggesting that we go out of here. Now, okay. And we turn up at random funerals. Okay, the funerals of people that we don't know. What I am suggesting is that we stop and we pause and we take stock and we think about the brevity of life. Because when we think about the brevity of life, the truth is that we tend to make better choices in life. The question is not, will you die, will I die? We will all die. The question for us is, will we live with the years that we have left? You know, will we make good decisions in the light of death that is going to happen one day? You know, will we make decisions that matter? You know, will we make our lives matter for what matters most in life? So let me ask you this question, you know, if you knew you had only 14 days left to live, what would you do? And that might not be the question you were expecting this morning. And it may have been sparked by the fact that we weren't together last weekend, but 2 weekends ago, we were on Abbey Terrace, many of us, celebrating. Sorry? Was it last weekend? It was last weekend, a week ago. Abbey Terrace. So Remembrance Sunday, thank you. I was sort of, as I stood there with my face in the sun, and we were remembering those that had gone before. I just thought about the way people had lived and the way people had died. You know, when we look at Jesus' life and we see that he only had 2 weeks left to live, and Jesus was the only one who knew for certain when he was going to die and how he was going to die and whose hands he was going to die at, just going where he was going to die, okay? You know, when he had 2 weeks left to live, what does he do? He goes to a funeral. And he didn't go to the funeral of a stranger. He went to the funeral of one of his best friends, okay? He goes to Lazarus' funeral with 14 days left to live, and he completely ruins the funeral because he raised Lazarus from the dead. In fact, Jesus, if you look at his life, had a history of ruining funerals. He even ruined his own funeral, but that's what Jesus does. And the reason Jesus ruined funerals was that he wanted to show that if I can overcome death, then I can overcome anything in your life. You know, and Jesus overcame death to show us that with him, anything is possible. And that's what we've been talking about in this series, This Is Us, which I'm wrapping up today. Next week, we've got a guest speaker coming for the Sunday. Then after that, we're starting a little Advent series called Behold, which I'm really, really excited about. But in this series, This Is Us, we're talking about how anything is possible with God. And we've been looking at the miracles of Jesus in the Gospels, and we've been seeing that there are messages in the miracles, much like modern-day marketing and modern-day advertisers. We've been looking at how they put messages in their logos, and we've been looking at some of the most popular, and because I've been there with this one every time that I preach so far, and for the sake of the one person that hasn't been here, I want to show you my favorite one, which is the FedEx one. Okay, for those of you that haven't been here, can you see there's the FedEx? It's a different color this time, but there is the arrow. Brian has now seen it, between the E and the X. Everywhere I go, I see FedEx lorries and trucks now. It's incredible. Even I'm seeing more than I used to. So it's incredible. But there's this symbol inside the logo. And once you've seen it, you can't not see it. All you see is the arrow. Okay, so here's another one. Let's have the Hope for African Children Initiative. Can you see that one? It's the Hope for African Children Initiative. So it first appears like a map of Africa. But when you look at it carefully, what you see is that there's an adult on the right-hand side and there's a child on the left-hand side. Do you see that one? Yeah. In fact, I see that so much now that I can't even see Africa anymore. I just see the silhouettes of the characters. And what marketeers have figured out is that if we can put messages subversively in logos, you know, that you may not see initially, once you see, you can't not see it. It's all you see. So here's one of my favorite ones, the next one, the Tour de France. Now, who enjoys the Tour de France here? I love that. I think that they're amazing athletes, the Tour de France. And you may think that that sort of sun is the Tour de France sort of logo, but if you look at it really carefully, you'll see that the sun is the front wheel of the bike, and the O is the back wheel of the bike, and there's a little sort of Nike sign that's the wrong way around, that's the seat of the bike or the bike frame, and there, the R is the chap cycling. You see that? But in the Gospel of John, okay, the stories that we read are called signs, meaning that they point to a greater reality. They help us see who God is. And in this series, This Is Us, we've been talking about how we believe, as I said, anything is possible, and how God is limitless in his love, and how he's relentless in his pursuit of us, and how he's limitless in his power, and how he wants to work intimately in our lives and make our stories part of his story. So, if you've got a Bible, turn to John 11. It's going to appear up here as well, but I just like the sound of you turning pages, really. We're going to, as we draw this thing to a close, in John 11, we're going to pick it up in verse 11, because this is the story of Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead. And it was one of the most popular stories in the first century. Have we got a little photograph, Liv, of, we can just go back to a photograph, that one there. Just hold it there for a minute, okay. If you go into the catacombs, anyone been to the catacombs in Rome? If you go down into the catacombs in Rome, you will find scenes painted on the walls of the catacombs. And this is Jesus with Lazarus here, one of the most commonly painted scenes in the catacombs. And the reason that it was popular was because it was so powerful. Because it tells us who Jesus was and what Jesus came to do. And so they would paint this story on the walls, and then they would talk about the story. They would talk the story through with one another. So maybe you're listening to this message this morning. Maybe you're listening on podcasts in a few days' time. And you're thinking, I don't really know what I believe about Jesus today. Maybe you've lost faith. Maybe you've lost hope. Maybe you've never had faith, and this is the first time you're here again. You're just exploring. I would always want to say that wherever we are on that journey, this is a safe place to process that journey of faith as we explore who Jesus is and what it is that he came to do. And we hope that this is a place where we're encouraged in our faith, where we're bolstered in our faith, where we receive hope, and that eventually with the passing of time, we go away from here believing that with Jesus anything is possible. But verse 1. Now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, Lord, the one you love is sick. When he heard this, Jesus said, this sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it. Now, Martha and Mary and Lazarus lived in this little town called Bethany, which is a couple of miles from Jerusalem. And Jesus would stay there when he went to Jerusalem. Why? Because Airbnb in Jerusalem was so expensive. Maybe not. Maybe it was because they were his very, very close friends, and they loved him, and he loved them. And he had actually been to Jerusalem for a while here, because the last time he'd been to Jerusalem, the religious leaders had picked up rocks the size of grapefruits and thrown them at him and tried to take his head off, frankly. But it says here that Lazarus is sick, and we don't know what the sickness is. Maybe he's got a fever, maybe he's coughing up blood, maybe he's got a tumor. He's going downhill fast. And the doctors are essentially throwing up their hands and they're saying, we don't know what to do. We don't know how to look after Lazarus. But Martha and Mary know what to do. They said, we need to get Jesus. They knew that Jesus had the power to heal Lazarus, okay? They'd seen Jesus use his power to heal other people. They'd seen Jesus heal strangers. They'd seen Jesus heal people that didn't deserve to be healed as far as they were concerned, okay? And so surely when he hears that one of his best friends is sick, he's going to come running and to do his thing. And then when he's done his thing and Lazarus is healed, everybody's good to go, as it were. So they reached, to use an Americanism, they reached out to Jesus. Now, Jesus loved Martha, verse 5, loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. Now, generally, when you hear that someone's sick, you go running. Really? Especially if it's someone you love. I remember when Tom, all those years ago, you had your accident. The phone went, Tom's in hospital, can you come? I went running all those years ago. He's still here. Praise the Lord. Okay. It says here that Jesus waited 2 more days and Lazarus died. Why did he wait 2 days? You see, the great physician didn't show up like they thought he would. And I want to say this, sometimes no matter how fervently we pray, no matter how audacious our faith is, God doesn't move in the way we think he ought to move. Actually, sometimes the cancer's not cured. Sometimes the business fails. And in that moment, we face disappointment because God doesn't show up in the way that we think he should show up. Anyone ever been in that place? He just doesn't show up in the way you expect him to, you know. And so we face disappointment. But it says in the text, he loved them so he waited 2 more days. Not in spite of his love for them, he waited 2 more days. Because Jesus is writing a bigger story here. You know, he's painting on a bigger canvas. And Martha and Mary couldn't see what he was doing. And they were asking him to bring his power as the great physician. But Jesus is writing a story where he gets to be the great resurrection. You know, in the midst of the disappointment and the sickness and their suffering, you know, he's in the business of making sure that the glory of God is revealed. And then in verse 7 it says, he said to his disciples, let's go back to Judea. Now we've got to remember that Judea is dangerous territory, okay? And the disciples said, but Rabbi, they said a short while ago, the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you're going back. And Jesus says, I have to go. I need to go. Down to verse 16. Then Thomas, also known as Didymus, I would have just stuck with Thomas, or T. Diddy, or something like that, said to the rest of the disciples, let us also go that we might die with him. We need to understand that Thomas is not the most optimistic of people here. They all go to Bethany, all right? And Jesus and the disciples arrive, and Lazarus has been dead for 4 days. That means that there's a fully fledged funeral going on. People are weeping, they're wailing, they're mourning, they're grieving. The family and friends are all together. Down to verse 21, look at this. Martha goes out to greet Jesus. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask. And Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Then Martha answered, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. And then Jesus makes what I believe here to be one of the most profound, if not the most profound, most remarkable of statements in all of Scripture. Jesus says to her, I am the resurrection and I am the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die, and whoever believes in me will never die. And this is a statement that only God can make. Honestly, if someone were to phone me up and say, Mark, we've had a loss in the family, we're grieving. And they said, could we see you? And I said, well, yeah, let's meet up. Either come to the office, or if you prefer to be down the line, we can meet down the line, you know, whatever's good for you. And then I'm sitting down with these people and I say, now tell me about your loss, tell me about your grief, tell me about your pain. And as they're talking, if I leant across the table towards them and said, I am the resurrection and I am the life. And if you believe in me, you will never die. You would look at me, you would avert your gaze, you would get up as quickly as possible, slip out, get out your phone, okay, and make a phone call asking people to come and pick me up and take me away. And I would be taken away to a little place with a padded cell, a lovely white padded cell, because everyone would think that I was crazy. Because this is either the statement of a crazy person or the statement of God. It's either one or the other. There's nothing in between. And when Jesus comes and says, I am the resurrection and I am the life, if you believe in me, you will never die. What Jesus is telling us is that there is power in belief in him that we will live forever. And that decision to believe in him is the most important decision we will ever make in our lives. It manages our eternity and it manages the here and the now. And what he's saying in this statement is he's making this promise that he will overcome death. And he's saying that he, Jesus, is the personification of life. And that if we believe in him, then we don't need to be afraid of death. We don't have to fear. You know, we don't have to live with fear at the end because, Jesus, you know, with the end is not the end with Jesus. Death is not a full stop. It's only a comma. So Jesus is offering this hope in this moment. He's offering this truth to Martha. He's saying that if you believe in me, you will live forever. This is an incredibly powerful moment. So look at what Martha does. Jesus asks Martha, do you believe this? She says, yes, Lord. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who has come into the world. And the question for us is, do we believe it? Do we believe it? Because what Martha says is a powerful confession. And she just says, yes, I believe this. There is a lot riding on how we answer this question in terms of eternity and the here and the now. What do we believe about Jesus? And then Jesus goes and finds Martha's sister Mary. And she's with the friends and the family, and she's grieving. She's in a place of deep sorrow, and she throws herself at Jesus' feet. Verse 32, she says, Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. I find that fascinating. She says exactly the same thing that Martha says, actually. It's like they've been talking to each other, you know, after Lazarus has died. And they're both saying to each other, if Jesus turned up, this would not have happened. Okay, he would not have died. So look at what Jesus does here, verse 33. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who'd come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, see how he loved him. Now, verse 35 there, Jesus wept. Won me my first prestigious award at the age of 10. I won a competition called the Bible Brain of Elmden. My father was a vicar. They used to do this summer holiday camp, and we had teams that used to compete with each other. And in these two teams, there was a score draw, as it were, in whatever competition we were in. And so the question was, what is the shortest verse in the Bible? And immediately my hand went up. And I said, that's it, you know. Jesus wept. It's the only one I could memorize because it was the shortest one, actually. So I, you know, but I knew it. I knew it. Jesus wept. And I remembered it as a kid because of its simplicity. As I've gotten a little bit older, and particularly in the last few years, actually, the more I've discovered its complexity, actually. Because I asked myself this question. If Jesus knew that he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead, why did he weep with Mary? You ever ask yourself that question? Why did he weep with Mary? Why didn't he just say, don't worry about that, just watch this? I've got a great party piece, Lazarus. You know, what did he do? Instead, he connected with her. He empathized with her. He grieved with her. His heart was full of sorrow. Why did Jesus weep with Mary? Because he ministered to Mary with tears. That's what Mary needed. I believe that Jesus wept with Mary because he knew that for the last 4 days she'd been weeping and she'd been saying, like many of us do from time to time, where is Jesus? Where is Jesus, actually? Where is God in all of this? Has God deserted us? Has God forsaken us? You know, where is God? And so he meets them in their sorrow. What we need to know about Jesus, if we don't already, is this. He says, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. In other words, if you want to know what God looks like, then look at me. And in this story, right here, what we find is a revelation of the heart of the Father. The heart of God is that when we grieve, we don't grieve alone. He grieves with us. And that, you know, Jesus is the one who comes to us in our hurt. He comes to us in our sorrow. He comes to us in our pain. And I don't know what you're dealing with. I know what some of us are dealing with. But I have no idea what everyone is dealing with here. I have no idea why you might weep. But we need to know that we're not alone in our weeping. Jesus grieves with Mary and he ministers to her. And Martha and Mary are disappointed because God didn't show up in the way that they thought he should show up as the great physician. But as I've said, he was writing a bigger story where he would be the great resurrection. And Jesus, once more, verse 38, says this, deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Well, what does that phrase, deeply moved, really mean? I mean, I'm deeply moved if someone remembers my birthday. Honestly, and what does it mean? What's John getting at here? I love Eugene Peterson, who writes The Message. He says this, okay. He says, a deep anger welled up within him. Why is Jesus angry? It's because death has taken his dear friend, Lazarus. Okay, the one who has overcome death, who is coming to overcome death, is filled with anger at death because he is the Prince of Life. He knows that he's going to overcome death at the cross, but he's angry that his friend has been taken by death in this moment. So Jesus, do you know, Jesus was not an insipid, apathetic character. This moment, Jesus is full of passion. He's not a dispassionate person, okay? He goes, take away the stone. Not take away the stone. He shouts this, take away the stone. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there is a bad odor. He's been there for 4 days. The King James translation translates this. But Lord, he stinketh. Don't you love that? There's a really bad smell going on here, okay? And Jesus says, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? And I love this. I love this. This is so important, okay? Jesus is not intimidated by the stench of anything in our lives. Nothing. He's not intimidated by our past, okay? He's not intimidated by the bad. Anyone here made a bad decision in the past? Yeah. It's universal. He's not intimidated by any of the terrible decisions we've made in the past. He's not intimidated by the things that we've hidden in our lives, that remain hidden in our lives at this moment. So they rolled the stone away. This is the best part, okay? They took away the stone. And Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you've heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said it for the benefit of the people standing here, that they might believe that you sent me. So imagine all this drama. Can you? I mean, this is Hollywood at its best. All right, it's really rising here, okay? Everyone's watching. Everyone's wondering what in the world is going to happen in this moment. Jesus has just rolled away the stone where a dead man has been buried. What is he going to do next? When he had said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice. A loud voice. Not, Lazarus, come out. Would you like to? Would you? Are you wondering? Would you? Are you thinking? Lazarus! Come out! Do you know why he did that? Because he'd been dead for some time, which meant that he was very deaf in the moment. All right? The dead man came out. Actually, there's all sorts of healing going on, not just resurrection. There's deafness, there's blindness, there's speech. There's everything going on here, okay? The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. And Jesus said, take the grave clothes off him and let him go. I love this picture. I don't do horror movies. I've never really watched a horror movie in my life. They are horrible, dangerous, destructive sort of things. But having never seen one, I could imagine someone zombified coming out like this. Okay, he's coming out. He's been dead for 4 days. He's walking out here. He has no idea where he's going. Do you know why he has no idea where he's going? Because he's got a cloth over his face. Whoever buried him didn't know he was going to be raised from the dead again, so they put this cloth around his face so he can't see where he's going. It's a nightmare for him. He's tripping all over the place. Jesus says, can't somebody just take the cloth off his face and help him out here? So they start tearing the grave clothes off of him. Because it's Lazarus. He was dead. And now he's alive. It's an amazing miracle. And there are messages in this miracle. There are two observations, like those, I want to give you. It's just a minute each, actually. The first one is this. Because Jesus is the resurrection, Jesus has the power to take what is irrevocably wrong and make it eternally right. We were designed to have a relationship with God. We were designed to connect with Him. We were made by Him and we were made for Him. We've been made with eternity in the depths of our beings. There is a space that only God ultimately can fill. We can't fill it, no matter how hard we try, with anything else. Everything else will leave us feeling unsatisfied, and only He can fulfill the longings of our hearts.